American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. It's Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Monday, April 7th, 2008. And you are listening to Newsreel, the WOG Global SITREP and Interglobal SITREP on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing, no matter what reality you're part of. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening and distributing this program, you are taking a stand for free speech as well. The idea of free speech is an interesting idea. I mean, it's one of those kind of distinctly American ideas, I would think. I mean, it is in their constitution and stuff like that. A lot of people don't like saying anything nice is an American idea. I think Americans really get the bad end of the stick. I happen to like Americans. I think Americans are good people, and I think that they are often the butt ends of bad jokes perpetrated by their government. And some of those things aren't even jokes. So stop ripping on the Americans. We gotta stop, you know, polarizing people into nationality. I think that's really a bad idea. When we talk about the American, we should be referring to things like the government and not the people, because the people in America are some of the nicest people around. And if we can, you know, remember that, maybe we could stop people from, trying to kill each other and stuff like that. I think that'd be really, really cool. But anyway, Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech by talking. And by talking, you could talk, I could talk, everybody could talk. You shouldn't have to stand back and go, oh, should I not say this? That doesn't give you rights to be a complete jerk. It's not like you can go around screaming your head off obscenities inside of sports bars and stuff. I mean, this is not a really great idea, but, you know, it's okay to talk about certain ideas and concepts. That's what free speech is all about. But anyway, meantime, in between time, you can follow up on all these news stories, but check my facts by going to my live journal. And you can get to my live journal by going to Sean, S-E-A-N, underscore Kennedy, like the dead guy, livejournal.com. This would be a free radio podcast. Well, a free podcast of some type. It could be heard in Rant Radio, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, Radio Red Mercury. And it can be heard in the Metaverse Cyberscape FOB in Second Life Node Marcel Grid 230-11994 down there at Hunker Downs and at the adjoining communities, which are growing as we speak. And as well, we're broadcast in the new wasteland, Grid 3403 19.41 North 117*3729.50 West. Yes. Yes, it's true. We're broadcast there as well in one of the most quickly growing tent cities ever made. Now, as this show will begin to, you know, I'm just a little bit behind on something. Some things I'm really bleeding edge on. And when the whole, you know, Virtusphere, I mean, we've been trying to get something going on where, you know, the internet turns into cyberspace for quite some time. And a while back, for those of you who haven't been paying attention, there was a dude sent me a letter named Ball Traveler. And he's like, oh, hey, man, I'm going to do something inside of Second Life. You might want to check it out. So I went there with Sim and checked it out. Totally blew me away. Completely blew me away. The thing, there's a couple things about Second Life that really did blow me away. The first thing that blew me away was how incredibly fucking hard the interface is to use. I mean, we are talking ridiculous. Like, what the hell have they got going on over there? Like, seriously, guys, Linden Labs, what are you doing? I mean, this interface you got there is a pretty complicated interface. I mean, it's like selection right off the top. If you can't figure out how to work that interface, you're not going nowhere. You know what I mean? Like, wow. I just found it amazing that they would have such a crappy interface. I mean, I'm not to rip on anybody, but it is not very intuitive. I got to tell you. So, you know, for those of you out there who are trying to figure out how to use Second Life and things like that, and they're feeling bummed out, feel like they're stupid. So nobody likes not figuring stuff out. Nobody likes that. They feel dumb. People don't like to feel dumb. But not to worry. Not to worry. I had problems too. But anyway, so I installed it. I got my video card up. And I went to this Hunker Downs that Ball Traveler had built. And when you log in there, there's a great piece of writing he's created which is, you know, I'm always really hesitant when people try to make gathering places for the walks, because invariably that turns into some kind of control mechanism where somebody tries to organize you and push you in a direction and try to, you know, create some sort of cause. And they try to do the church thing where they get a big group of people together and then they try to wield that like a mob mentality. Very, very dangerous stuff. Very dangerous stuff, and something we should be guarded against. Because quite often, young men and young people in general, or people in general, but I find usually that young men are really keen, and a lot of them, you know, they've just taken the blue pill or the red pill, they've taken a pill, and now they're waking up to the horrors of reality, and they're angry about it. They want to do something about it. And if you don't have someone who's a little more seasoned and who understands that, you know, you can't just run out into the fire, otherwise you're going to get blown up, you know, a lot of innocent kids can wind up going to jail for bullshit reasons, you know. So yeah, I would like to think that I would stop people from going to jail. Big fan of protecting, you know, the revolutionaries, because, well, without any revolutionaries, there is no revolution, no matter how slowly it may be progressing. But Ball Traveler, getting off topic here, Ball Traveler put in this thing, and I want to read what he wrote. And this is when you load up and get into the Second Life thing, which I think is just brilliant. First off, this is what he says, quote, "First, let me say this is not an attempt to organize the walks, period, full stop." Now, that was golden right there. "The purpose of this place is to provide a virtual meeting place where the Rant Media fans can meet. There is no leader here, period, end of story. If someone seems to be taking that stance in some way, then kick his or her ass. Belonging to this group does not make you a wog, nor does it make you more wog. The area that you have arrived in is known as the welcome area and is available to the general public. The rest of the property is only available to those who join the Rant Media Voice group. The purpose of this is to keep out what are called griefers. Griefers are the people that have nothing better to do and cause disruption of regular activities of others inside of Second Life. Look at it as the same as when someone joins a first-person shooter game and runs around team-killing everyone. If you're a fan of Rant Media, then join the Rant Media Voice group. To join, do a search for Rant Media Voice and join. There will never be a cost. If you haven't figured out how to use your mic yet, just ask anyone here for help. Hunker Downs is a voice to encourage, is voice encourage, which means it's, they like it when you have a microphone. But not mandatory place. If you don't have a mic, that's fine. But we would ask you to try and activate your voice option so at least you can hear us, and most of us are in moist mode." It's true. I mean, there's talking there. Like, the avatars actually speak and stuff. So if you can't hear, well, you know, it kind of deadens the experience. "Remember, this is your home. Do as you wish, talk as you wish, look like whatever you wish." Which was amazing, and that was the end of his thing. And that was what I read walking in there, which I thought, hey, you know what? That's really cool. And it's funny, because I read that over at Sims when we were screwing around the other night. And I think I mentioned it on the air at that time, but I was just blown away by that someone could have that much foresight, you know, that someone would get it. You know, because after a long time of people not getting it, you know, you kind of get discouraged. You're like, damn, you know, I'm doing all this stuff. Nobody seems to be getting it. I mean, tell us what to do, Sean. You know, oh, my God. You know, come on, guys. But there's guys like EmpowerThyself.com, and there's other WOGs out there that have done real things to try to, you know, get people going and shit like that. And when you know it, between the time frame that I went into Second Life and saw it for the first time, and the time I went back to Hunker Downs, all of a sudden the guys from Empower Thyself have linked up, and they've started, like, building these little clusters, and they're all linking up to Hunker Downs. Kind of like that big ship cluster in Islands in the Net, or in Snow Crash. They had another ship cluster in there as well, where all the boats had jacked together, and it makes like this floating continent out there. Very, very cool idea. Very cool concept. And I showed up, I must have spent a couple hours in there anyway, looking at different people, some incredibly talented folks in there. This one chick was making dragon skins. It just blew my mind. Blew my mind. The amount of skill that was going on in that place. I mean, It's one of those things you look at, it's like seeing a CNC machine for the first time, you know, and you're just like, oh my God, look at all the things you could do with this. It's just staggering, you know. Really, really a rave. Now, I know, not everyone gushes about online virtual communities and worlds and stuff like that. And it's true, you know, it appeals to my little, well, my 80s viewpoint of what I want the internet to be. You know, flying along, you know, and looking down and stuff. Yeah, I know. I try to keep the stories to a minimum, you know, but it's exciting. It's exciting. And for those of us who are hesitant to embrace this kind of meetup, I mean, it is superior in every single way that I have seen to any other kind of voice conferencing, chatting. I mean, it is genuinely superior. It's very, very different. Very, very different. It will take a while to get used to, but it is a fantastic medium of connection. Very, very cool. So props to everyone at Hunker Downs. And what I was talking to them about, this is funny, because we started chatting, and I was so blown away by this, but what I want to do is I want to start broadcasting from there. It's true. Eventually, I'm going to be signing up in there and creating a little spot where people could go and listen to the show live. And you're thinking, well, Sean, the show is, like, recorded, right? So how can you record the show and do the show live at the same time? Well, I got to record the show at some point, so there's no reason why I couldn't record the show, broadcast it live inside of, you know, the metaverse while I'm recording the show. And then so you don't have to, you won't miss the show. But if somebody's there and they want to listen to the show while I'm doing it live or something like that, hey, that might be kind of cool to do. You know what I mean? I mean, we need to create a little thing. I don't know. Kind of a cool idea. Messing around with it. I've always enjoyed the idea of broadcasting from inside a Virtusphere so that you could have, like, virtual crowds, all kinds of stuff. Very, very interesting stuff, to be sure. But let's get into the news. Lots of crazy news. In freaking news, sent in by Sane Trader, hey, you want to build a phone company for $100? In a research park outside of a low-key bustle in Huntsville, Atlanta, Mark Spencer finishes his barbecue and resumes wreaking havoc on a multi-billion dollar phone equipment business. Spencer is the inventor of Asterix, a free software program that establishes phone calls over the internet and handles voicemail, caller ID, teleconferencing, and a host of novel features for the phone. With Asterix loaded onto a computer, a decent-sized company can rip out its traditional phone switch, even some of its newfangled internet telephone gear, and say goodbye to 80% of its telecom equipment costs. Not good news for Cisco. We have to figure out ways to get into everything. Carriers, business, equipment companies, says Spencer. For better or worse, I don't tend to think small. Spencer, who is all of 29 years old, is poised to disrupt the $7 billion market for office telecom switches, often called PBXs, much the way Linux open source computer operating system crushed the price of business computers. Business computing brought woe to established leaders like Microsoft and Sun Microsystems. Since Spencer released Asterisk to the world in 1999 as a phone operating system, it has been downloaded 500,000 times and continues to be downloaded 1,000 times per day. Some 350 contributors have taken it from a rocky phone voice system to one with clear calling and more than 100 features. Electric Utility Southern Company is using Asterisk in a pilot program to translate voicemail into text messages for 30 managers' Blackberries. Unbelievable. And this is something you could run in your house. Like, dude, what are the possibilities of this? I mean, if I wanted to run something like this, I mean, the possibilities for organizing. Now, if people wanted to organize and recruit from the wall group, who am I to stop anybody from doing that? You know what I mean? I can't see a problem from that. You know, so if somebody from Empower Thyself comes along and goes, you know what, I'm going to create an action team to feed homeless people. And any WOGs out there want to get involved with this action team to feed homeless people, you know, come on over, right? And let's say, I mean, that's a really neat way to look at projects. So let's say Alex does tons of stuff. Let's say he comes up with that. And he's got this Asterisk system, sets up phone systems, communications, blah, 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 so that people can do that. Now, let's say the project Alex is insane, and he's actually trying to, you know, get people to donate blood, and he pockets the money. Totally ludicrous plan. I'm just making this up as I go along. Now, when they come back in, people could say, oh, yeah, we worked with Alex before. It was a shitty idea. It was horrible. You know, we posted here and there about how bad the experience was. Don't work with him again. So he'd have one shot to screw people over, and that would be it. But the WOGs remain intact, and that's the kind of stuff that, I mean, when you think about organizing and having groups and functions and stuff like that, having comms is vital. So to have a free phone system, that's almost hack of the day material, you know, out there. This is just a brilliant thing that makes it available for individuals to organize large groups in to be able to produce a real effort. The only trick is now we got to come up with a way to actually produce and create money, which, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of people making money inside of, you know, virtual worlds and stuff like that. I wish there's a book out there somebody knows that's like the definitive guide to making money in second world, in like, you know, online communities, the metaverse, stuff like that. Maybe there's a way that the WOG community could do that so that we could, you know, pay for our own space or something like that. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. Maybe somebody knows a book. If you know a good one, send it to me here, newsreel@randradio.com, or send me the ISBN, or just send me what you think, or hey, you know, just say hey. In surgical squiddy news, this was sent in by Risen, Holy Dr. Octopus, a snake-like surgical robot from Carnegie Mellon University, could let a surgeon perform critical heart operations and just make one incision. Known as the cardio arm, the curved robot has a series of joints that automatically adjust to follow the course plotted by the robot head. Okay, this is Dr. Octopus's arm, or one of the arms from Squiddy in the Matrix. That's exactly what this thing looked like. This provides greater precision than the flexible endoscope can offer. It's certainly easier to control, said Robert Webster III, a professor at the Vanderbilt University who works on flexible medical probes and was not involved in the cardio arm project. He was not involved with it. The cardio arm is operated using a computer and a joystick. It has 102 degrees of freedom, three of which can be activated at once. It allows it to enter through a single point in the chest and wrap around the heart until it has reached the right spot, say, to remove problematic tissue. The nice thing about it is the design in each joint follows where it went in space. It's not always possible to do that in other designs. This kind of control prevents the probe from bumping into sensitive tissue. The disadvantage of a jointed robot, however, is it's harder to miniaturize, Webster says. The smallest version of the device is 300 millimeters long, so the length of a ruler, has a diameter of 12 millimeters, so just over a centimeter thick. Eventually, the CMU researchers hope to make a snake small enough to enter the bloodstream through a blood vessel, says Mark Zenti, one of the principal researchers of the Cardio Arm Project, professor of surgery at the University of Pittsburgh. Zenti has used robotic surgical assistants in the past and notes that they all have limitation. The Da Vinci system, for example, can't squeeze into tight locations within the human body and requires five or six entryways, he says. Now, this is fascinating stuff. You know, I wonder if there's somebody out there who could help me with this. You know, I'm always talking about people go to school. Go to school for the future. Go to school for the future. When people ask me, what future should I be getting into, Sean? It's usually IT because, you know, we got China, we got India, we got Russia. They're all blowing up. There's lots of IT going on there. But then what's, after we get everybody networked up, what is going to be the next major trend? And I believe, me, the Sean Meister here, believes that the next major trend is going to be robotics. So when people tell me, what should I look into? I would say robotics. But again, I'm biased. Why? Because I think robotics is the coolest fucking shit ever. Ever. Are you kidding? I have puppets and I don't have to pull the strings. Yes. Destroy him, my robots. Yeah. Fantastic. Who doesn't like robots? Really? Well, you know, a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't find them very interesting. You know, a lot of people listening to this are like, robots, whatever, blah. But I'm seriously thinking now. You know, I'm 35, right? I think. And it's not too late for me to go get a degree in robotics. Why would it be? You know what I mean? Use it or lose it, baby, if you can't get your brain going and learn a little bit of stuff going on here. So I think I might look at that. PCIT's got some courses in that. Maybe I'll make money from it. Maybe I won't. But it'd be interesting to learn, don't you think? I mean, really. Even just doing experimentation. I mean, if you look around, there's lots of robot builder clubs, stuff like that locally. I mean, there's that dude built that camera, mounted it on his plane. You know what I mean? Like, this is the kind of stuff that that you guys should be doing. You guys should be getting involved with robotics so that you can use this to make some real money. So you can live nice, happy, long, productive lives and create the world's first sex bunny robots and make billions of dollars. And maybe give me some of it, which would be nice so I could fund my own evil, demonic mecha projects. Well, they're not really evil or demonic. They're just kind of selfish, which is kind of the same thing if you aspire to the Anton LaVey sort of ideas of evil. But anyway, I digress. The point is, robots are a good idea. And I don't think they're going to be the be-all, end-all. I think they're going to get rid of some of the labor shortages. But I think, really, cyborgs might wind up being kind of a thing of the past. I think the new idea is going to be doing gene therapy. It's going to be using biologics, growing new arms for yourself, so that the tissue always remains alive. You know, maybe there could be a use for a port, like making so you could upload memories and stuff like that. That's very cool. And part of that whole, you know, bio, like, wetworks enhancement sort of thing is all part of what we call Gen Joke News. Got some Gen Joke News here. Gen Joke News. Human cow embryos have been created in a world first at Newcastle University in England. So they're humans or humoons? Human cow. Cow human. Humau. Or cowman. Cowboys. Cowboys have been created at the world's first at Newcastle University in England, hailed by the scientific community, but labeled monstrous by opponents. Well, guess what, chuckles? We're going to create them anyway, so you better get on the bandwagon. A team has grown hybrid embryos after injecting DNA into eggs taken from cows' ovaries, which had most of their genetic material removed. The embryos survived for 3 days, 72 hours, and are intended to provide limitless supply of stem cells to develop therapies for diseases such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and spinal cord injuries, overcoming a worldwide shortfall in human embryos. Dr. Tisha Peru, director of Human Embryonic Stem Cell Laboratories at the Australian Stem Cell Center, says somatic cell nuclear transfer, or SCNT, has been done between animal species, but the 99% human embryos could boost research. If successful, they provide an important additional research tool to help realizing of stem cell-based therapies for human diseases. I guess you're not allowed to do it with human stem cells, right? Because those, you know, every single cell is sacred or something. All avenues of research, including SCNT, need to be encouraged if we want to fulfill the promise of stem cell technologies. But her colleague, Dr. Andrew Lissette, warned that the process was yet to yield a stem cell line and remained only an academic possibility. In January, the Fertilization and Embryology Authority gave Newcastle University a license to do the work, but the British Parliament would later debate the long-term future of such research and will do so next month. Under the license, embryos are not allowed to be developed beyond 14 days. No, you could do it, but you can't do it longer than 14 days because that would just be inhuman. Yeah, it's much more human to have, you know, kids running around in Africa with AKs killing each other. Absolutely. You know what I mean? That's a really great idea. Let's have a massive starvation being used as weapons, and let's be afraid to use science because we think it's bad. You know, the thing that gets me is people bitching and whining about science being unethical. Okay, let's take everything that's unethical in the world and put it in a big pot, okay? And then we let the really, really unethical stuff sink to the bottom, and the sort of kind of unethical stuff sort of come up near the top. Now, the sort of kind of unethical stuff, mostly at the top, will be science, because let me tell you, there are bigger ethical things to worry about than whether or not we let a little bit of goop in a dish live longer than 14 days. I'm just saying, okay? I'm just saying. There's bigger fish to fry here. Okay, we got massive starvation. Do you remember a time when people were not starving in Africa? Everyone's like, oh, the poor people of Tibet. Yeah, it's shitty what's going on in Tibet. You going to do anything about it? No. Why? No one's going to fight a land war in Asia. Questions? That's what Buddhism gets ya. Whole lot of fuck all. Welcome to samsara. Get off the wheel of suffering by lighting yourself on fire. Thanks. Not really a WOG trait. Survivalism being up there within the certain battlesphere. Don't get me wrong. Feel bad for those little motherfuckers in the pajamas getting beat with the lathi sticks. Feeling bad for those guys. Feeling bad for them. If I could make it stop, I would. I would. If I could make that shit stop, I would. But guess what? You can't. You cannot, because no one has the force to bring the bear on that nation. And to be honest with you, do you want to fuck with China? They haven't got a lot of the problems that the West has, where, you know, they're trying to play little political games and shit like that. Those guys are communists. So the ruling party, they just decide on some shit and march on it. And they're not stupid. So you know what? Everyone's all making a big noise in the blogosphere about, oh, China, China and Tibet, China and Tibet. Yeah, why don't you take a look at some of the other genocide that's floating on around the world and stop, you know, trying to jump on some, like, feel-good bandwagon where you're going to put the 50-year-old Free Tibet sticker on your car because it's not going to do shit. If you want to make a difference, get involved, learn science, try to create something that helps somebody somewhere, for God's sakes. In hunter-killer news. Now, this is new. This is new. This is... I want to talk about robotics being applied. Here is robotics being applied. I didn't even hear about this. Boeing, this should be on the cover of News Magazine. Well, you ever get one of these stories? I'll report this stuff on Newsreel, you know. And people are like, wow. And you know, you think that I shouldn't be the guy. Like, you should be downloading this from some dude somewhere yelling into a microphone. You know, you ought to be getting this on CNN. This ought to be top line stuff. A lot of these stories, some of the stories are kind of fluffy. Okay, granted, you know, someone's got my own personal bias. But some of the stories are just off the chain. Like this thing here. Now check this out. 100 killer news. Boeing, you know, is poised to attempt a brace of world record endurance flights with its A-160T Hummingbird unmanned air vehicle after installing new safeguards to prevent a flight control system failure, which led to a loss of a prototype last December. A loss of a prototype. Where did it go? It's in my basement. The accident put a three-month hold on an already aggressive test and demonstration schedule earmarked for the A-160T for the rest of 2008. Yet Boeing remains confident it can meet its schedules. It will set records for rotary, UAV payload, and endurance that claims others will find difficult to match. Rotary UAV? Yes, this is a chopper. Now, I have long said that UAVs should be choppers. They should have hover capabilities. Now, listen to the capabilities of this thing, okay? The record attempts flights will be able to hover above the ground at 15,000 feet in an 18 to 20 hour flight with a 300 pound payload. Together, they will fall in the milestones of Phase 1 demonstration, which began in August of 2003. Supported by DARPA, there's a shock, the tests are intended to prove that a purpose-built, clean-sheet, large vertical takeoff and landing unmanned air system of VUAS, V-U-A-S, VUAS, can truly go the distance compared to other rotary UAVs that are generally derived from existing manned helicopters. We think we got something different here, says Boeing Advanced Systems Business Development Director Grady Eakin. The range, endurance, and payload are unique for the rotary ring UAV, and we think it provide a variety of missions all at the same time. We've proved we can get there quickly, stay a long time, and fly to places that commanders think are important. Although the Hummingbird is aimed squarely at standard UAV roles such as reconnaissance, surveillance, communications, and relay, as well as target acquisition, they don't say anything about launching Hellfire missiles on stuff, but the one on the page that you go to has missiles on the chopper. Boeing says the broader capabilities of the turbine-powered helicopter make it capable of much more. One of the initial test vehicles has been mocked up with stub wings to carry up to 8 Hellfire air-to-ground missiles. Oh, there it is. While another has flown within an aerodynamically shaped pod large enough to evacuate a wounded soldier or transport a small robotic vehicle. Yeah, baby! Drop ship that shit! You gotta love it! How can you not be excited about that? We got drop ships on the go. I mean, any way you cut it, drop ships are hot. I'm sorry, drop ships are hot. Now, as we add to the concept of drop ships, UAVs, drop ships dropping off robots to, you know, go search your house. Once they catch you, load you up in the UAV, and bring you back to the cop shop, well, the old lie detector is going to be coming out. And brain scanning is the new form of lie detection. This is what they should be doing. And I'm sure they are doing research on with a lot of these quote-unquote terrorists that they're picking up. Enemy combatants, strap them in a chair, put on the old Lindsay Out, you know, ultraviolet helmet there. Bang! On we go, and we're going to scan your brain. Now, here's a little something that you didn't know about. This thing here just kind of freaks me out more than a little bit. You know, you ever see that stuff? Like, sometimes you'll see a torture chamber, and they got, like, the needle that they stick you with, and that's kind of the scary thing. You remember in Star Wars, you know, she's all in the room there, and the needle comes in, the droid with the needle. How about this bad boy? In brain scan news, by dosing mice with eye drops containing gene probes that travel to the brain. Harvard researchers are using magnetic resonance imaging to observe the brains of living animals. The method could allow doctors to directly diagnose problems such as tumors, viral infections, and head injury without the need for a brain biopsy. It could also be useful for monitoring patients and perhaps even targeting drug treatments in affected areas of the brain. Holy crap. This gene probe technique, reported to the latest issue of the Federal American Society for Experimental Biology Journal, allows MRI scans that show gliosis, the process in which glial cells in the brain form fibrous networks as a defense against damage. The scarring occurs in disorders such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease, and as a consequence of brain tumors and serious brain injury. The diseases that cause it with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's is largely due to, I think, there's a lot of research that actually points towards NutraSweet, which was talked about in the forums. It's funny, actually, you go in the forums, this guy did a post in there about NutraSweet, Rant Media forums. And I remember back in the day, I did a show. One of my very first shows I ever did on Rant Media back in 2000 was on NutraSweet. And I should probably see if I can find that disc and we can run that show again. Just because, you know, it's nice to know that my shit is still current. Anyway, in earlier studies, radiologist Phillips Liu and his colleagues at the Harvard Medical School injected the probes directly into the brains of the animals. Now they've incorporated them into eye drops. Like, why does that just make my skin crawl? Whoop! Oh, I can feel it going into my brain! To create the gene-targeting probe, Liu and his colleagues hitched a common MRI probe to a DNA sequence complementary to the mRNA of a protein found in glial cells. They tested the probe in mice, in which the blood-brain barrier, which regulates movement of substance of blood to the brain, has been breached. The barrier is compromised, and many of the neurological disorders, including stroke, multiple sclerosis, viral infections, although the process is not yet well understood. Now, the way I kind of get it here, this whole thing is it's kind of like, you know, when you get an x-ray and you have to drink that horrible chalky shit and then they, like, map out your intestines and stuff like that. Sort of the same idea, only they do it with these eye drops that they put inside your head. So now they're already using this stuff to, you know, to see if people are lying or not. But if we can put in eye drops in your eyes and then use that to enhance the ability to scan you, oh, baby, wait for that one. We're going to be seeing that story coming out pretty quick. Now in Metaverse news, Metaverse, Cyberscape, you know, that whole thing. Got to have some of those stories because, after all, that's where we live. In Metaverse news, are supercomputers on the verge of creating Matrix-style simulated realities? This is the question. Now, by Matrix-style, we're talking about not Second Life. Because when you go in there, I mean, it's limited. Okay, you're walking around. It looks like you're trapped in the beginning intro of a movie for I Want My MTV with Dire Straits. You know, Money for Nothing. That's kind of the level of graphics. There's some people doing some pretty ninjas neat stuff in there, but it's definitely not the Matrix. Michael McGugan at Brookhaven National Laboratories in Upton, New York, thinks so. He said, virtual worlds realistic enough to be mistaken for the real thing are just a few years away. In 1950, Alan Turing, father of modern computing science, proposed the ultimate test for artificial intelligence. The human judge engaged in a three-way conversation with a machine, and another human should be able to reliably distinguish man from machine. A variant of this Turing test is the graphics Turing test. The twist behind the human judge viewing and interacting with artificially generated world should be unable to reliably distinguish it from reality. By interaction, we mean you could control an object, rotate it, for example, and would render in real time. This would be like if you look through a camera on a remote control car, and you had a virtual remote control car, and it had a camera on it too, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between the two. Although existing computers can produce enough artificial scenes and texture detail enough to fool the human eye, such scenes take like several hours to render. The key passing the graphics Turing test, says McGugan, is to marry photorealism with software that can render images in real time, defined as a refresh rate of 30 frames per second, which, you know, should probably be a little bit more than that. That's like TV. McGugan decided to test the ability of one of the most powerful supercomputers, BlueJean-L, at Brookhaven National Laboratory in New York to generate such an artificial world. BlueJean-L possesses 18 racks, each with 2,000 standard PC processors that works in parallel to provide a huge amount of processing power. It has a speed of 103 teraflops, or 103 trillion floating operations per second. By way of comparison, a calculator uses about 10 floating operations per second. In particular, McGugan studied the supercomputer's ability to mimic the interplay of light and objects, the important component to any virtual world with ambitions to mimic reality. He found the conventional ray tracing software could run 822 times faster on the BlueJean-L than on a standard computer, even though the software was not optimized for the parallel processors of that supercomputer. This allowed it to convincingly mimic natural light in real time. The nice thing about this ray tracing is that the human eye can see it as natural. There are several types of ray tracing softwares out there, but I choose one that is relatively easy to port in a large number of processors, but there might be faster, even more realistic if they're used in parallel computing. So as we look at this, he goes on and talks about it. He's talking about this. He's talking about how, as time progresses, you know, because it's not like just because, you know, Rand Media's starting to move into the virtual sphere, we're starting to get into the cyberscape. It doesn't mean that we're, like, married to any one particular program. I mean, yeah, sure, there's Second Life and stuff like that. But just as we used to use IRC a whole lot, just as we used to use you use ICQ, just use other instant messaging programs, as things get better, you move on. So if there's something better that comes out, there's nothing that ties us to it. You see what I'm saying? In Megacorp news, this was sent to me by the Boon. Very cool story. Sony BMG. Now, Sony is a mother. They are really into proprietarizing their stuff. They make really good hardware, but their software is notoriously bitchy to try to get to work with anything. Well, the Boon sent me this Megacorp news about Sony BMG, a company known for its enforcing its intellectual property rights, is now facing the other end of intellectual property-related lawsuit. A report says that the complaining company, Point Dev, seized some of Sony's assets, which revealed that pirated software appeared on 4 of their servers. Point Dev is a small software company mandated a bailiff to raid one of Sony BMG's own building in January this year. The raid revealed that 4 Sony BMG's owned servers containing the pirated software. It appears that as though the company discovered this when an IT department employee requested assistance for use of the product and called Ideal Migration. When the technical support looked into the case, it discovered that the key used to activate the software was a pirated version. Oh, that's gotta be nasty. Doesn't that suck when you get caught using pirated software, especially when you're one of these guys who really likes to freak out on people because they use pirated software? Yeah. Yeah, that would be justice, is what that would be. Really, really sad. Too bad for you. I hope Sony gets their ass sued off by these little dudes, and I hope they win. In wearable news. Now, here's a good one. Intel. Now, as you notice, the BlackBerry or the CrackBerry or whatever you want to call it, they're getting more and more faster, right? Everybody's getting quicker and quicker and quicker. So as I predicted some time ago, where I was saying that cell phones were going to become the new wearables, well, in wearable news, Intel plans to claim Wednesday in Shanghai the next big thing in consumer gadgets will be the internet in your pocket. Well, that's not really the next big thing, is it? The challenge for the giant chipmaker will be to prove that it's not too late to market to a market that has rapidly become the hottest spot for consumer electronics business in a post-PC era. At a developer event in China, interesting, the company based in Santa Clara, California, will display a range of wireless internet devices that Intel believes will fill the gap between smartphones and laptops. The company is hoping to capitalize on the success that Apple had with its iPhone, which is one of the most popular mobile web smartphones. Intel is calling the new computers mobile internet devices, or MIDs, and claims that it will have a significant advantage over makers of chips for cell phones because the Intel version will be highly compatible with the company's laptop and desktop processors for most web software is written today. The first generation of Intel MID technology will be aimed at data, not voice, communications, leaving the company out of the market for smartphones, but it has not dampened the enthusiasm of Intel executives who foresee a proliferation of devices ranging from its advanced ultra-black laptops to small tablet-sized device abuse for browsing the web, navigating internet chat, rather than voice communications. Now, this is all, you know, brought in by, like, the Asus Triple E. The Asus Triple E has pretty much revolutionized the market. People are starting to go, wow, you can do really cool stuff. As long as the applications are there, we don't really care about all the details. It's like, what can you do, how well can you do it, and how portable is this sucker? What enables the innovation is the ability to bring over all the existing PC applications, says Anand Trajaskar, general manager of the company's Ultra Mobility Group. The weak link in the Intel strategy is that voice communication remains a significant factor for consumers choosing to buy handheld devices. Some of them it does. Many of them it doesn't. A lot of people don't like convergence. I'm one of them. I don't really think that convergence is a fantastic idea. I don't. I mean, yeah, okay, it's a good idea to have, you know, devices that, you know, can do a bunch of different things. Don't get me wrong. I think that's really, really cool. But I'm not a big fan of having one device so that if it breaks, you're screwed. You know? I like backups. Backups are good. Incidentally, when was the last time you backed up your data? I'm just saying, you should back up your data. In space robot news, managers of the International Space Station on Wednesday cleared Europe's new Jules Verne cargo ship for its first docking with the orbiting research outpost. Did you hear about this thing? After assessing results from 2DL trial maneuvers around the station, including having the two craft close within 36 feet of one another, the mission statement team of the international partners of the project gave approval for an attempt on Thursday to link the ships. The Jules Verne, named for the visionary French author, is the first new class of robot station supply ships called Automatic Transfer Vehicles, or ATVs. The robot ship was built by the member nations of the European Space Agency as one of Europe's major contributions to International Station. We have proven the Jules Verne system is safe, reliable, and ready to dock at the station, John Elwood, the ATV project manager, said for Europe, said after getting approval to proceed. Everyone has worked very hard to get to this point. The Jules Verne is scheduled to dock with the station's Russian-built Zvezda service module on Thursday at 4:10 a.m. Eastern Time and firmly lock in place about half an hour later. If the link-up does not occur as planned, the next attempt will be made on Saturday, Mr. Elwood said. The ship is to maneuver and dock itself automatically using global positioning satellite navigation as well as new optical guidance system for close approach to the station. A twin laser system to fire pulses of light at reflector positioned at the end of the Zvezda to determine craft's orientation, distance, and closing rate with the space station. While the autonomous operation should be controlled by the space station sensors and computers, the rendezvous and dockings will be monitored from a control center in Toulouse, France, in cooperation with the Russian Space Station Control Center near Moscow, NASA Center in Houston. So we're talking about a robot flying up to the station and hooking up to it. This is brilliant. Above the station, the Russian astronaut Colonel Yuri Malenchenko, backed up by the American station commander Peggy Whitson, will be at the control panel where he can send commands to Jules Verne and make an emergency retreat in case something goes sideways. Extra precautions are necessary because the robot ship, which weighs 21 tons on Earth, could do substantial damage to the station in a collision or other mishap. Now, the neat thing is with this thing, the cargo craft is 32 feet long and 14.26 feet wide. It's equipped with four solar arrays and an X shape spanning 73 feet. It has four large aft engines. I mean, this thing is huge. You know, it's carrying 7.5 tons of fuel, oxygen, food, clothing, and equipment in other essentials. 7.5 tons this thing's packing. The Jules Verne is the first of at least five robot cargo craft Europe's will dispatch to the station. It is carrying 7.5 tons of fuel, oxygen, clothing, equipment, and other essentials. Because the mission is considered a test flight, station controllers did not include any irreplaceable run-of-a-kind cargo on this mission. So, but we're talking about something that can deliver 7.5 tons autonomously to a space station. A yeah, baby. How do you play? How do you say sexy? You know, seriously, that is hot. Love it on that very, very much. Thinking it's super duper cool. In cracker news, now here's a good one. You know, we all know about Blu-ray versus HD, and HD lost, which is kind of sad actually. Because I guess Sony got bitched, and you know they played this round a little bit better than they played the last round. Well, in cracker news, sent in by Nihi, a company has cracked the anti-piracy technology on Blu-ray discs. Big shock there. Slysaw says the new version of its AnyDVD program allows users to make backup security copies of high-definition movies. The claim is a blow to Sony, which developed the Blu-ray format. The discs are protected by an anti-piracy system called BD+. When it launched in 2007, developers boasted it would not be cracked for 10 years. Well, you got 10 months. Sony declined to comment. Oh, yeah, probably because they couldn't because of all the egg on their face. Slysoft said it hacked BD technology in November. Oh, you suck. It was decided to wait for the result on the format war between Blu-ray and HDTV before releasing the full product. Oh, BD Plus is designed to react to attempts on its technology. Its developers say they can relock copy discs, making them unusable in the future. Wow. Slysoft reckons it's prepared for this. Peter Van Hoosen from the company said, the worst case scenarios are our boss locks us up with only bread and water and the company dungeon for 3 months until we are successful again. Well, I gotta say, you buy something, it's yours. You know, you should be able to do what you want with it. I'm thinking, you know, it kind of makes sense to me. Maybe I'm being a little bit weird with it, but there it is. In power news, sent in by Fat Ninja. As we know with robotics, there's huge problems with power. How do we get life into these things, right? Well, Fat Ninja sent me a story which addresses that issue. Materials that directly convert radiation into electricity, directly, can produce a new era of spacecraft and even Earth-based vehicles powered by high-power nuclear batteries, say U.S. researchers. Electricity is usually made using nuclear power by heating steam and rotating turbines that generate electricity. But late in the 60s, you hear about this? In the 60s, the U.S. and Soviet Union used thermoelectric materials that convert heat into electricity to power spacecraft using nuclear fission or decaying radioactive material. The Pioneer missions were among those using the latter nuclear battery approach. So it's tested. Dispensing with the steam and turbines makes those systems smaller and less complicated, but the thermoelectric materials have very low efficiency. Now U.S. researchers say they've developed a highly efficient material that can convert radiation, not heat, from nuclear materials and the reactions into electricity. The Liviua Popa-Simil, former Los Alamos National Laboratory nuclear engineer and founder of the private research and development company LAVIM, and Claudio Montel of Alabama A&M University, U.S., say transforming the energy of radioactive particles to electricity is more effective. Materials they are testing would extract up to 20 times more power from radioactive decay than thermoelectric materials, they calculate. The tests of layered tiles with carbon nanotubes packed with gold and surrounded by lithium hydride are underway. Radioactive particles that slam into the gold push out a shower of high-energy electrons. They pass through carbon nanotubes and into the lithium hydride where they can move electrodes, allowing current to flow. You load the material with nuclear energy and unload it in an electrical current, says Popsimi. Very, very cool. Now that's pretty slick. When you look at that and you go, wow, we got, you know, nuclear batteries. Isn't that what the Veritech hover tanks used to run on? It could run on nuclear for 25 years or protoculture for 40. You know, it just kind of gives me hope. Makes me happy. Makes me feel kind of warm and fuzzy inside. And with that, we got some new toys, too. How about this for sexy kit? Some stuff called graphene. Researchers, cyberpunk kit, graphene. Researchers from the University of Maryland physicist, research from the university, research, okay, let me try that again. Researchers from the University of Maryland physicists show that graphene, research results from the University of Maryland physicists, show that graphene A new material that combines aspects of semiconductors and metals could be the leading candidate to replace silicone in applications ranging from high-speed computer chips to biochemical sensors. The research, funded by the National Science Foundation and published online in the Journal of Nanotechnology, reveals that graphene conducts electricity at room temperature with less intrinsic resistance than any other known material. Let me say that again. It reveals that graphene conducts electricity at room temperature with less intrinsic resistance than any other known material. So this stuff is a better conductor than gold. Graphene is one of the materials being considered as a potential replacement of silicone for future computing, said NSF program manager Charles Ying. The recent results obtained by the University of Maryland scientists provide directions to achieve high election speed and graphene near room temperature, which is critically important for practical applications. Holy crap. Intrinsic results from the unavoidable... gets into a lot more of the science on it here, but this is pretty cool. Gotta admit, it's pretty cool when you have, you know, a device that at room temperature can speed up electricity better than gold. Hey, pretty slick. Pretty slick. And speaking of speeding things up, this brings us to today's Daily Hack. Sim sent this one in. It is a BitTorrent plugin that detects whether an ISP is raping your torrents. Vuz, or /Azurus, actually operates a legit video delivery business using a torrent. So they've been among the most vocal opponents of ISPs throttling torrents. To help build their case and create a detailed log of every ISP that scrambles torrents, along with their particular poison short-circuiting uploads of general bandwidth caps, For instance, they've released a plugin for BitTorrent client that detects ISP torrent sabotage. On your end, it keeps track of how interrupted connections and lets you know if your ISP is hosing you. You can share your results with Azurus if you like. They've already gotten a wiki going with the worst torrent ISPs, with Cablevision, RSM, and Astadelphia pulling the same tactics as Comcast. Very, very cool stuff. Sim, thank you very much, and it's a good way for people to know just what is going on with your connection. Recommedia, a really neat stuff sent in by DK called The Story of Stuff. It's a series of videos on YouTube. I've got a link up there on the site for the first one. Check it out. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry. I will be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. And if you cannot donate, please do distribute. You can do whatever you like with the show. Hand it out. Just try not to make any money with it. Actually, don't make any money with it, because Sim will kill you. If you can donate, please do so by clicking on the Donate tab on the Dark Atlas website, or send an envelope to Rant Media Studios, Box 18121, 1215C, 56th Street, Delta, BC, Canada, V4M2M4. And I want to thank the Army of Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have information you'd like to send me, you can get me a newsreel, N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rentradio.com. If you like the music in the background, please check out Psytrance, because I believe that Psytrance is one of the greatest forms of music ever created by man. And I'm going to fade out now with a track that's some Psytrance, some very good stuff. Make sure you check out, you should check out Philosophomatica. Anyway, it's a website that streams trance. Very, very good stuff. It's not Rant Radio, but they're definitely friends of ours, I would say. Remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. And until next time, hey, that's what server said. End of line.